There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.
Let's get the latest from the ongoing cricket game. Pakistan taking on Afghanistan at the moment. Afghanistan batting. Monty, what can you see?
Afghanistan 160 for 5 currently after 35.3 overs. Looking good for a score of maybe 240, which could be challenging for Pakistan later.
We will watch with interest on that one. You've got New Zealand against Australia. That one gets underway in around about 25 minutes' time or so. So we'll have news for that one for you as well. Italy against the Netherlands. Germany against Sweden. The two quarterfinal in the Women's World Cup this afternoon. First of those games is off in around about 50 minutes time, 5 o'clock local time here in the UAE, and then Germany, Sweden a little later on, 8:30 this evening. America looking good in this FIFA World Cup.
Yeah, they certainly are, Tom. A victory for them last night over France, the host. They went 2-0 up to the US of A. They are the standard bearers in women's football. They are three-time World Cup winners, of course, and they now take on the Lionesses, Phil Neville's England, of course. A lot of coverage back in the UK. That is one thing for women's football in general. The coverage for this World Cup and the previous World Cup over in Canada, it is no doubt about it on an upward trajectory. It's fantastic to see. I've watched a lot of these games. I've loved every minute of it. England, yes. USA have been superb. Sweden the other night and their victory over Canada, thoroughly good game. I'll be tuning in to Germany, Sweden tonight. That will be a good game. Of course, this, the other side of the draw, Italy, Netherlands, Germany, Sweden, and then that Women's World Cup final in a couple of weeks' time as well, 2 weeks tomorrow.
Chris McCarty, I know you're a big fan of the Ladies World Cup. I've been watching a little bit on the side. As a proud Scot, what happened to your team against Brazil?
Don't ask.
I could not believe that result.
3-0 up.
Oh, my word.
20 minutes to go in VAR. There's been plenty of controversy. And actually, the comparison to the Men's World Cup last summer, if you recall then, there was a lot of controversy surrounding VAR in the early part of the tournament, and then things just seemed to iron themselves out as the tournament went on. Fingers crossed that that is the case, because we want to be talking about the quality on the field, not refereeing decisions and not the VAR. We saw it last night, good win for the USA. We saw it the other previous night, England's 3-0 success over a very good Norway side. We're talking football, that is important. Fingers crossed we'll see another two fantastic matches this evening.
Talking of football, big news today. Manchester United have confirmed the signing of Aaron Wan-Bissaka from Crystal Palace in a £50 million deal that makes him their fifth biggest signing in history. And that might detract from some of the headlines that we've been following throughout the week about a certain Rafa Benitez. What on earth is going on there?
Oh, well, that's a blooming good question, Tom, because Rafa Benitez, the news this past week, his three-year tenure at Newcastle United at St James's Park is over, at least it will be tomorrow when his contract runs out. Newcastle released a statement to say that despite conversations that they had with Rafa and his representatives, his tenure is over. I'm delighted to say we can get more on this now with a very good friend of ours. He's a man who resides in this part of the world. He is a man who has been at the very top of the Newcastle Supporters Trust, the supporters club over in Newcastle. Delighted to say that joining us live on the line, it is Mr. Neil Mitchell. A very good afternoon to you, Neil.
Good afternoon, Chris. How are you doing, mate? Long time.
Very well indeed, Neil. Very well indeed. Where do we start with this mess? Let us start with your reaction to the news that Rafa Benitez is no longer going to be Newcastle United boss.
Well, they've spent more. And out of the doors walk hope and pride and somebody who had a vision and a project in mind for the club, and who, if you look at what he's done with transfers, he's actually in profit in transfers over the last 3 years. And yet he's got the team playing far better than their actual worth. If you look at the value of the 11 on the pitch, the starting 11, it's the third least gross value of starting players in the Premier League. So he's got them punching way above their weight. And yeah, sometimes it's not pretty, but it's methodical, it's organised, and we get it, and we get the passion. And to just let that walk without there seeming to be a plan B of any case whatsoever. Neil Redfern, who's just been appointed as our under-23s manager, looks set to take first-team training when they return. And it's an omni-shambles. It's just a typical mess.
It is a mess. It's not the first time that we have talked about the mess at St James's Park, Neil. And listen, you are, I won't say a long-suffering fan. There have been good times as Newcastle fans over the years. But what is going on? Rafa, is this a decision that he has made? Has this come down from Mike Ashley, the owner? From your understanding of the situation, what has gone on?
Well, my understanding, and this is directly from Rafa's, one of Rafa's people, was Rafa didn't know anything about it until somebody telephoned him because he'd seen the release of the news on Sky News.
Wow.
Make of that what you will.
Wow. So there has been suggestions, Neil, Rafa Benitez, whether it's his people putting it out there, whether it's perhaps even Mike Ashley's people putting it out there, that there was an offer on the table from China. £12 million a year contract was one quote that I read. Is that the case? Had Rafa had his head turned, or was he committed to signing a new deal and moving forward with Newcastle?
As I understand, the deal on the table didn't give him full control over transfers. The transfer budget was limited yet again, and he's had promises made by Mike Ashley that he would get every penny that the club generated, and that's a quote. And then you see Mike Ashley's taken $34 million out of the club, and Rafa didn't get every penny that the club generated. So you can understand why you wouldn't trust the man. I don't think I'd trust the man if I shook his hand. I'd want to count my fingers after I'd shook his hand.
Listen, and you can hear the passion in you, Neil. What on earth then moving forward? We've heard the reports, and again, they are a bit sketchy reports of a potential takeover. That's been mooted for a number of months. I know you have spoken at length. I know on Twitter, social media, incredibly active in trying to get to the bottom of it, Neil. From what you understand the situation to be, Amanda Staveley, who was, of course, involved in the takeover of Manchester City back in 2008, she has been at the heart of this for a number of months, trying actively to find a buyer for Newcastle. You have always stated, Neil, that the asking price from Mike Ashley is about £400 million. Is that still the case? And where is this takeover chat currently at?
Well, look, my understanding at the moment, as it stands, Amanda Staveley no longer in on the scene. The current interest comes from Bin Zayed Group, Dubai-based. Sheikh Khalid, who owns Bin Zayed Group and is the chairman, is a distant cousin of Sheikh Mansour, who owns Man City. I've actually seen what they call the heads of terms, the document that agrees the initial outline of a sale. $350 million is the price. There's certain terms and conditions in that. That Mike Ashley would retain advertising for free during a deferred payment period, and that can go on at length. There's definitely something been happening, because then, about 5 days after that, a company was made with Sheikh Khalid as one of the directors in the UK, called Monochrome Acquisitions. And if you go back to the heads of terms that were signed and agreed between Mike Ashley and Bin Zayed Group, it was called Project Monochrome. Now, that's not a coincidence. Absolutely not a coincidence. So there's something happened, but this is 5 weeks ago. Now, what I would then expect to happen is a takeover, if agreed. And indeed, Bin Zayed Group pretty much came out and said, look, it's done, we're there. And you know as well as I do in this part of the world, as soon as you have something in writing, it is done. Yeah. It's different with heads of terms when you're negotiating a football club sale. Before you sign off the share price value, and before you sign the shares from one company to a new vehicle, that can be renegotiated. And I think this is where things have ground to a halt. Mike Ashley has proved time and time again, he's not the most willing seller in the world. He's not someone who is easily going to let the club go. He's done this before with sales, and I can rattle sales. I've been on the fringes of unofficial advisors to a number of groups who've tried to buy the club, and one that was done and dusted failed at this hurdle because Mike Ashley suddenly wanted to change the terms. So much of a change that they just said, right, get lost, done, we're walking away. I hope, beyond hope, that that isn't the case now. Is Rafa going part of this? Somebody told me that he wasn't necessarily seen as Bin Zayed Group's man, and therefore he would be allowed to go. That's certainly possible, but we need something from the club. The club's been silent since Rafa walked. In fact, the only news we've had confirmed from the club is that Rafa Benitez has left. We've got season ticket renewals due next week, and that looks like that's going to be down significantly. We've got a transfer window closing rapidly, and no manager, and seemingly no plan B from Mike Ashley.
Yeah, that's I find that interesting to jump in there, Neil. You've mentioned Neil Redfern, who of course was the under-23 boss at Leeds United. He had a spell in charge there. Former Barnsley midfielder. We're going back to the mid-90s for any football fans that remember those days. Is he the man that's going to take charge? You've said that you expect he to be in the role for pre-season, which I think starts early next week. I'm reading Roberto Martinez, the former Wigan, the former Everton, current Belgian boss, he's favourite. I'm seeing Patrick Vieira, who didn't exactly set the world alight at Nice in his first European job last season. He's been mentioned with it. Gary Monk, Mark Hughes, the names go on and on and on. What are you hearing on that front?
Well, you can add Mikel Arteta to that list. Jose Mourinho for a short period of time, because there was pictures circulated with him having breakfast with Sheikh Khalid one day. So whether they've got a relationship or not, who knows in this part of the world. The list goes on and on. Only Newcastle United could go from favourites to sign Kylian Mbappe to be favourites to appoint Gary Monk as their manager in the space of a fortnight. In the space of a fortnight, Chris. It's mental. Oh, it's typical cool. Newcastle. It's more bonkers than a box of frogs wrapped up in a bag of snakes. It's just crackers.
Oh, but you love them nonetheless.
Always. I mean, gosh, I'm currently on the beach in Ras Al Khaimah with my family, and my missus is saying, you're taking calls about Newcastle United again. I'm like, yep, because she knows fine well. She's not just married to me, she's married to the black and white.
Yeah, but give us this. For anyone listening, Neil, and this is an important point, we often talk and fans get caught up sometimes in their club, but there's no doubt that Newcastle are a giant club. Now, I appreciate you went close in the mid-90s under Kevin Keegan, and a lot of Leeds fans listening will say, well, we're a giant club. A lot of Nottingham Forest fans will say, we're a giant club. Sheffield Wednesday fans. The list goes on and on. But Newcastle are primed to be an absolute monster club. With the right investment, Newcastle, the world is there for Newcastle United, isn't it?
Well, this is why we cling to hope, and it's the hope that kills every season. Imagine we were taken over by somebody from Dubai who was then prepared to put, and we don't expect ridiculous levels of investment. We've got a realistic idea about what's possible and what's not. But you imagine Newcastle United versus Man City next season, Dubai versus Abu Dhabi, what that would do for this region as well. You know, you can imagine the furore in a football mad part of the world. It changes the scope, it changes the entire picture of where we sit in the global game. And that's why there's that hope, and it's the hope that at the minute, because we've got complete silence from the club, from the owner, and actually Bin Zayed Group have gone quiet as well, and I guess I can understand that to an extent. It's that hope that is killing me at the moment, because we just have no information. And it's not the right way to run a football club. It's the way Mike Ashley seems to do it time and time and time again. And here we are again, hoping that we're going to wake the sleeping giant.
Yeah. It's wrong, isn't it, when you've got so many passionate thousands upon thousands of fans that live and breathe Newcastle United and live and breathe all your football clubs, that you're kept in the dark. Last one from me, Neil. It's probably one that will be dependent on who your owner is. Pick a manager for me. Who is out there right now of all the names that have been linked to that football club? Who would you think, right, let's get him in, let's get this ownership sorted, whether that takes a month or takes a year. Who's the man, do you believe, to take this football club forward?
I'm telling you now, if I was Bin Zayed Group and I was able to somehow manage a purchase of the club in the next fortnight, I would sit Rafa Benitez down and say, right, tell us about your project. And that would immediately get them a ridiculous amount of kudos with the fans and a project ready to go.
Interesting. Back to Rafa. No Jose? You don't fancy Jose following in the footsteps of his mentor, Sir Bobby Robson?
If you see how... Look, there's an absolutely wonderful sentimental thing there that I personally would love. But if you see the bond that Rafa's not just made with the fans, with the community, the work he's done with it. The fans created, some of my friends created a food bank. And the amount they've collected for people in need of food in the UK and in Newcastle, astounding. And Rafa's backed that, turned up with players out of the blue to shake people's hands and say thank you very much, got involved with projects with Newcastle United Foundation who's helped kids, disadvantaged kids, disabled kids, just put so much back into the community, because that's what Newcastle United is. That city sits at the heart of the city. If you buy that club, you buy the heart of the city, quite literally, and Rafa got that. And if you see the bond he's made, in spite of, yes, like I said, sometimes the football's not pretty. But do you know what? I would rather have a 1-0 safe win than 4-3 either way every week, because frankly, my heart couldn't take that anymore.
Showing your age there, I think, as well, Neil.
Listen, I think so, mate. Aye.
We could talk Newcastle all afternoon, Neil. Listen, I really appreciate you taking some time out. I know the missus has probably been driven up the wall with calls and stuff for you that you've had over the course of the past few weeks. But listen, bless you, my man. Thank you for joining us. Thank you for putting us in the picture with exactly what is going on. You are a sleeping giant, our Newcastle United, there's no doubt about it. We are watch with interest what happens over there in the coming weeks. Top man, Neil, thank you.
Cheers, mate.
Always a pleasure. The voice of Neil Mitchell, as you can hear there, Tom, a man who lives and breathes Newcastle United.
Indeed he does. And if you want to send us any of your thoughts with regards to Newcastle, the state they're in, or of course your club and your signings, your ins and outs, then do get them into us now. Text on 4001.
Unbelievable goal!
This is The Grill, live from Kickers Sports Bar, where the game is always on.
Plenty of football for football fans out there at the moment. We've, of course, got the Women's World Cup quarter-finals continuing in that competition today. Italy against Netherlands, Germany against Sweden a little later on. Also quarter-finals of the Copa America, isn't it?
Yeah, I think it's Uruguay versus Peru tonight. Yeah. And that's going to be a good game. My favourite for the Copa America, I told Chris last week, was Uruguay. And let's hope if they win tonight, they will be playing Chile in the semi-finals.
Yeah. Let's hope for some goals, because the quarter-finals thus far have not lived up to expectations. Brazil, huge pressure on the host. Tete, of course, keeping his job despite their World Cup. Not misery per se, but disappointment. They drew 0-0 with Paraguay, eventually going through on penalties. Then you had Argentina beating a stubborn Venezuela side, but a big win nonetheless. Messi yet to really spark, but Argentina into the semi-finals. They'll take on Brazil. First time that these two teams have met, I think, since 2007, when Brazil beat them 3-0. And then last night, Colombia, who had serene progress in the group stages under Carlos Queiroz, former Real Madrid and Manchester United, Real Madrid boss, Manchester United assistant, beaten on penalties. Stubborn Chilean side, a Chilean side that is maturing, an elder kind of statesman-like, if you will, Chilean side, but they emerged victorious on penalties. So you've had 0-0, 2-0, 0-0. Let's just hope for goals tonight, and I'm with Monty. I think Uruguay will emerge victorious from this. It's a Uruguay-Chile semi-final. It's an Argentina-Brazil semi-final on the other side. So it's starting to warm up quite nicely as the Copa America. Because over the piece, I think, in actual fact, it's actually been quite a disappointing tournament thus far.
Yeah, I think it's
not caught fire yet.
It's not caught fire. And is that to do with the fact that, you know, some of the teams are sort of missing key players and things like that?
Maybe. I mean, Argentina, for me, haven't convinced Lionel Scaloni. I still think he's the wrong man in that job. And if they do win it, it will be a bit of a surprise. They haven't hit the heights. Brazil missing Neymar, no doubt about it. For once, you look at Brazil and there's a lack of magic. There's no mystique about Brazil anymore. They look a bit functional, a bit methodical. Yeah. Colombia were good in the group stage. Carlos Queiroz always sets up teams to be defensive. They've come a cropper on penalties. Chile have just gone about doing their business. Nothing spectacular there. In Uruguay, with Cavani and Suarez, you've always got a chance with two world-class strikers. So the tournament has been a bit meh. A Brazil-Argentina game, though, always brings, and I would love Messi just to catch fire. I appreciate we've probably got a lot of Brazil fans listening, but for Messi to win a big tournament with Argentina in his career, he needs it.
I think Argentina found a good striker, Lautaro Martinez, this Copa America, and I've been following a bit of Martinez in the Serie A, playing for Inter Milan. He had a decent season with them, and he's bringing that form into the Copa America, so his support is good for Messi, and I think Higuain not being in the squad is also a good thing for Argentina and Messi.
Aguero is obviously there and scoring goals, and Martinez has scored in the last two games. So watch Argentina. I still would say Brazil are the slight favourites, home soil, just to get one over, because fundamentally, defensively, I don't think Argentina are that strong. But of course, when you've got Messi, you've always got a chance.
Uruguay against Peru, quarter final, 11 o'clock this evening, local time here in the UAE. Quick word about the Africa Cup of Nations ongoing at the moment as well. Games in Group E and Group F later on today. 6:30 this evening sees Mauritania taking on Angola. Cameroon are then in action against Ghana later on this evening. That one off at 9 o'clock local time here in the UAE. And then Benin taking on Guinea-Bissau. That one is not going to be until midnight tonight. Is that one caught fire yet, the Cup of Nations?
Yeah, I mean, I would say I've enjoyed the African Cup of Nations a little bit more. I mean, there's been no real standout kind of performance or result this far. I mean, Morocco look really good. Hervé Renard I mean, this is a man who's got history in the African Cup of Nations, has won it with Zambia, that incredible story, one of the greatest stories in African Cup of Nations history. He's won it with Ivory Coast. They look good. Belhanda, you know, Boussoufa, who's of course played his football over here, they look a real strong side. I like the look of Egypt as well. Javier Aguirre is a man who's been it, seen it, done it all. Atletico Madrid, he was Mexico boss, he's had a time over here. Mo Salah, probably the standout player. And then you've got Nigeria, who have looked, I think, Monty, you're tipped to go all the way.
I tipped Ivory Coast.
Ivory Coast
week, yeah.
It was. Sorry, my apologies. I think it was Boyan who we had on who tipped Nigeria. So the African Cup of Nations, there are more teams that are looking good, more teams where it's much more difficult to predict who's going to win this African Cup of Nations, because Nigeria have been good, and obviously Egypt have started the tournament very well indeed.
There was one game which was an eye-catcher so far in the tournament, was Kenya versus Tanzania. And we talk about all the Premier League stars in the they play day in, day out on Saturday and Sunday, you know, playing for Spurs, Arsenal. Victor Wanyama, he's playing for Kenya, and his team had a good game against Tanzania. It was 3-2 hard fought. Tanzania took the lead on both occasions, and Kenya had to fight back. So and what an incredible story for Kenyan football, because we never speak about nations, you know, who, you know, smaller nations like Kenya. But if Kenya do make it through the group stage, it could be the first time they make it in the African Cup of Nations. Great story there.
Yeah, it is a great story. Keep an eye on that one, Kenya. And as you rightly point out, captained by big Victor Wanyama.
South Africa, with that victory against Namibia, so their chances are still very much alive. Sorry to come back to you about South African sport again.
Stop it, Tom. Stop it. Yeah, very much alive. Beating the neighbour Namibia. So I think just any victory is good for Bafana Bafana. But Tom, I think that coming to the latter stage of the tournament, I don't think they will be a threat. But yeah, nonetheless, good victory for the boys.
Yeah, they take on Morocco next up as well. And Morocco
It will be very, very tough against Morocco.
It's an interesting, you know how we're sort of talking, we talk about transfers in the first hour of the show, and obviously the transfer window at the moment. It's a bit of a shop window, this, isn't it, for a number of
100%.
Clubs as well, because an opportunity to see some of the talent that's coming through the ranks.
Absolutely, no doubt about that. And in part, that might explain things. A lot of clubs perhaps just holding off spending big until they do their due diligence and send scouts over to Africa. They'll have scouts over in South America. I think the beauty of football, the globalisation, the global nature of it now, is it's very difficult to find these little hidden gems. Most of the big clubs have scouting systems, deep scouting systems, that are aware of a number of the talents. But no doubt, they're in the shop window. This is a chance for your Kenyans, your Tanzanian players, to say, hey, this is who I am, this is what I'm about, and I can go on and try and forge
there's,
your...
There's one player I'm looking forward to. I think he's representing Morocco, Hisham Ziyech. He played for Ajax last season. And if he has a good African Cup of Nations, I think there'll be bigger clubs coming in for him next season.
I think regardless of that, I think given what he did last season, I think what was it? I think he scored and assisted about 46 goals. So this is a guy that I think he's got a €30 million buyout at the Amsterdam Arena by Ajax. Whether he has a good tournament or not, he is a player to watch out for. 26 years of age now. He is someone that I know an awful lot of big clubs are very, very eager to have a little look and say, hey, is he capable? Not blessed with tremendous pace, but what he is incredibly intelligent footballer, can spot a pass and can score goals as well. So I think he will be on the move, whether he has a wonderful African Cup of Nations or whether he's, you know, superseded by the Belhandas of this world. He is a wonderful talent, and Ajax face a real fight to keep him.
We will talk more football in just a few moments' time. We're going to talk about AC Milan being banned from Europa League next season. We'll find out why. We'll also get all the latest from Chelsea. What's happening there? I thought there was meant to be a transfer ban on there, and yet already sort of chat of new players coming in. So we'll get more from the boys on those. Stay tuned to the Dubai I-103.8, listening to The Grill.
You're listening to The Grill. Join the conversation.
Text 4001 or message us for free on the Dubai I-103.8 app.
Yeah, game on. And breaking news in this during the show today, confirmation of one of the worst kept secrets in the transfer window, that Wan-Bissaka has signed for Manchester United. Obviously, a lot of talks about him during the Premier League last year. And let's get the thoughts of a former Manchester United man on Wan-Bissaka. Wayne Rooney's been giving his thoughts.
Enjoy it. Play with no fear. It's Manchester United is a fantastic club. One of, if not the best, football clubs in the world. And you have to embrace it and embrace the culture of Manchester United, learn the history, and go and do your best. And I'm sure if you do that, you'll be fine. And I'm sure the coaches there will be telling you all this.
What?
Anyone get any of that?
Great to see how excited Wayne Rooney is once again.
If Aaron Wan-Bissaka has listened to that from Wayne Rooney, he is absolutely excited about moving to Old Trafford, isn't he?
He's been knocking them in there, hasn't he?
He's beside himself with excitement there. I mean, that is... that's Wayne. Listen, what he's saying there is he's got to enjoy it, he's got to embrace it. Moving to a club of the stature of Manchester United, you know, it's anything but. You either... You're covered by it and you become a failure, or you're, I guess, you grow to 9 feet, 10 feet tall. And I'm sure in the case of Aaron Wan-Bissaka, from what all he's said, from what I'm hearing of him, he's a well-grounded individual. He's got a close family unit around him, and he's got to go there and he's got to enjoy it. And let's hope over the next few years, from a United perspective anyway, that he does improve and he goes on and to have a wonderful and fruitful career at the club.
A quick word about Wayne Rooney as well, because you saw the goal, didn't you?
Yeah. His goal, anyone that hasn't seen this, it went viral, so it did. Wayne Rooney, now at DC United over in the MLS, fully 70 yards from goal. The ball drops, he sees the keeper off his line, and the execution, first and foremost the vision, then the execution. It's not the first time he's done anything like this. He did it at West Ham for Man United, he did it at Everton. I think it was against your West Ham, in actual fact, where he scored from the halfway line in his second spell at Everton. He is someone that, listen, he's got his detractors, does Wayne. But what he is he's an incredibly talented player, and what he's doing for the MLS, we saw that it went viral last season, the 90th minute, his team are drawing 2-2, the goalkeeper's up, he chases back, he wins the tackle, he provides the cross that then leads to the winner. I mean, he just has these moments, does Wayne, where you just have to stand up, you have to applaud, and you have to say, well done, that young man. Yeah.
But in fairness, he's been great for the MLS
and
great for DC United. And he's becoming a big, big name there in Washington.
And you know what? You've got to give him credit, Carl, because he's stuck at it.
Yeah.
Not only that, he's more than just a cheerleader. He's more than just a mascot. He's producing on the pitch. He's kept himself in shape. And that, I think, you know, that's where I'm like, you know what? Well done, you. It would have been easy for Wayne to go over there, maybe slip into the way of life, but he's not. He's still there working hard.
I've seen a couple of interviews with him recently, though, and he's talked very openly about how happy he is over there at the moment because of that sort of element of anonymity, the fact that he can walk down a street and not be bombarded with people asking for the four autographs and selfies and bits and pieces. And so he's, from a family point of view, because he was constantly in the limelight, the media limelight whilst he was in the UK, He seems to be in a better place for that.
Yeah, well, I mean, he's got to compete with the president in Washington, so I think he'll take a back seat to that. But yeah, Tommy, he seems to be a lot more at ease. But often I think us as fans are very harsh on Wayne. You know, I watched a highlight reel of him the other day at Man United. He was an incredible player. The things that he did for Manchester United, you know, I think ultimately one of the greatest strikers that played in the red jersey. And I think, yeah, he's embraced the MLS. A lot of people thought, to your point, Chris, he would go there, you know, sit back, take it easy, jump on the hamburgers and, you know, play every Saturday, but he's really, really made a massive impact in the MLS, and I think he's been fantastic for the competition, of course, fantastic for DC United.
Keep thoughts coming in on that one. Let's turn our attention to Chelsea now, if we can. So, explain this one to me, please, boys. We understand there's meant to be a transfer ban in place for Chelsea, and yet they're trying to sign Kovacic at the moment.
So that deal was put in place before the ban. So I think there's a little bit of legal manoeuvring, if we can call it that. The loan deal for Mateo Kovacic from Real Madrid, the Croatian midfielder, can be made into a permanent one. I think the fee, roughly about £44 million, to turn that into a permanent deal. That, by all intents and purposes, looks as if Frank Lampard, who we'll get to him in just a second, who appears to be the next manager of Chelsea, he's rubber stamped that, or at least given his blessing for that deal to go through. And then from here on in, Chelsea can't sign another player this summer, and then in January before they can sign again next summer. We've talked about it on this show. I think it's exciting times for Chelsea. I think this is the first time we're seeing a new direction being taken by the football club. They have invested huge sums of money in their youth academy over the years. They've had great success with that as well. Jody Morris, who has been Frank Lampard's assistant at Derby County, he deserves a lot of credit in what he's done. I think he won four of their last five FA Youth Cups. So he's someone that knows it, knows the scene. And I look at some of the talents. Tomori, who was a great success at Derby. Reece James, who's coming back from injury, been a great success. Tammy Abraham, who scored goals for fun at Aston Villa. Mason Mount, who has been likened to his manager, Frank Lampard. Of course, he was on loan at Derby last season. So, young talent there. Throw in Callum Hudson-Odoi, throw in Ruben Loftus-Cheek, and you've got a nucleus of a young English side, vibrant, exciting, with your little bit of experience. Christian Pulisic coming in as well. Frank Lampard, a young manager who sees the game you know, he wants to play expansive football. As a Chelsea fan, and I'm not one, I'd actually be quite enthused about this next kind of era at that football club.
Fully agree with what you're saying. To me, the only thing is, do they have that talisman? Do they have that Hazard within that bunch, Chris? Because to me, what you said now, very exciting. Defensive-wise, midfield-wise, they seem good. Striker-wise, yeah. I'm not 100% confident. Yeah. Gerard does not excite me. Pedro, he's been there and thereabout. But to me, they don't have a man up front there. And to me, that's always been the success of Chelsea, with the likes of Drogba in that team, with the likes of Diego Costa. And to me, if they could, I know they can't, but if they could buy one more that type of player, I think that would be really, really a team to be reckoned with come this season.
I take that point. I absolutely know where you're coming from. I think the kind of ace in the hole in many respects is Alvaro Morata. On loan at Atletico Madrid, he signed an 18-month loan. I don't know the ins and outs of that contract, but there's a wonderful player in there. And I take your point about the Didier Drogbas, the Diego Costas, but this is a new Chelsea. And I wonder if Lampard can maybe, if there is a break clause in that contract, Morata, for a new way of playing, could be a talismanic figure. He's the kind of guy that I think would appreciate an arm around the shoulder. Maurizio Sarri didn't give him that. I think Lampard could. And I think Morata, again, with this new look Chelsea, Pulisic in there, Willian in there, Pedro in there, you've still got Ross Barkley, you've still Kovacic, yeah. Kante, Willian. Jorginho,
Willian
we've mentioned. There's enough there that I would be enthused. I take the point though, losing Hazard, someone that can win games on his own, they perhaps don't have that, but there's a nucleus there where if they can ride out the next year and spend big next summer for Frank, good times could come for that football club.
Is Frank the right man? Will Lamps go back to Chelsea? Let's get some thoughts from the fans.
There's no one else. He's the man for it. Simply as that. You know, I just wish him all well and hope he has the time.
I think he'd do a fantastic job. He'd bring all the young players back and players we've got out on loan. Yeah, I think he'd do a good job.
I think I'd like him to have maybe a couple more years, to be honest. But he was never going to turn this job down, surely. I mean, he's Chelsea through and through. We're just going to have to wait and see. As long as everyone backs him in the crowd and the crowd doesn't get restless if things aren't going our way, I think we'll be okay.
I think we'll be working well with the youth players because we've got a transfer ban. I think that we need to, like, expand how good we use the youth players because we're not be able to sign any quality players. And I think our youth players are very decent, so I think they all work well with them.
What is for me is I think it's a bit of a lack of a motivation in the changing room. There's problems with Sarri and Kepa before, as you know, there have been little problems in the past with our managers, Conte and Costa, etc. So I think it'd just be good to have someone that is an icon to everyone in the changing room and fire them up and get them going.
So, experience. That's the one question mark I would have over Frank Lampard. I think as an individual, as you know, fits the mould perfectly going back, and you know he will be a fan's favourite, he will be a good man around things, but does he need a bit more managerial experience? Because let's be fair, he hasn't got a huge man.
I personally think, and I'm a big fan of Lampard, I've always been, I think he's a very intelligent bloke, he's done very well off the field for himself, writing children books and the works. I think he will be a great manager, but I feel this is too early for him. I would have liked to see him do two more seasons at Derby or a club similar to that, just to kind of, I don't know, just kind of get a little bit more experience. Because the thing that I'm worried about him going to Chelsea now, if it doesn't work for him, and we know that he can't buy any players or so forth, it might ruin his career. I just feel if he goes there, he has a terrible season, Chelsea, I don't know, for some other reason, don't make the top 10, or they only end up in the top 8, or something like this goes wrong, I really think that's going to dampen his career. So to me, he's the right guy for the job, but I would have given him another two more years before I appointed him.
It's difficult. It really is, because there's two schools of thoughts to all this. If we look just at Chelsea in isolation, someone with huge experience, someone who's won the World Cup, for goodness sake, and Luis Felipe Scolari, fails at the job. Someone without experience, Zinedine Zidane at Real Madrid, wins 3 European Cups on the bounce. So there's loads of kind of different things to this. Chelsea, the organisation that they are, will have done their due diligence. Make no mistake, Frank Lampard is not getting this job because of goodwill. He's getting this job because clearly they feel, with his coaching staff around him, Jody Morris, Shea Given, who was his goalkeeping coach,
Bring them with, will he?
They're all coming over. There's a young coach as well by the name of Joe Edwards, who I'm reading all sorts of things, very highly thought of, development coach at Chelsea. he's going to get a first team role. So they've looked at the full team. Claude Makélélé, who recently gave up his job at Eupen in Belgium, he's been talked about finding a role for him. So where there is one instance of a manager with little experience doing well, that I appreciate, there are a litany of, you know, examples of managers given too much too soon. Just like, though, not necessarily experienced managers guarantee you success. I think, as I said, it's a new era, it's a young era, it's a bright, vibrant Chelsea that we're going to see. Why not give it to Frank? If it doesn't work out, then you move on.
I think he even wants to bring Didier Drogba in his coaching staff, is what I heard. So I think it's a good project for Frank Lampard. However, it's a big risk factor for a big club like Chelsea, because moving from Derby County to Chelsea is a big, massive step, in my opinion. But it's another thing what Roman Abramovich has taken. He normally appoints the bigger managers. Now he's trying to see if he can appoint someone who's Chelsea through and through. Give it a try and see how one season goes. And I think Frank Lampard will do a pretty decent job with Chelsea. I
suppose then you have to look at it from a Lampard point of view as well, which is this right move for me, with the big question mark over Abramovich as well?
Yeah.
I mean, that's one of the big issues is to get him back to the club.
Absolutely.
You know, allow him into the country first and foremost, get him to come back to the club.
Yeah, Roman Abramovich, there's no doubt he's been a little bit more hands-off. I mean, had he been more hands-on, Maurizio Sarri would not have seen out the season. Let's be frank about it. When you lose 6-0 at Manchester City, you're done. Certainly you would have been in past years under Roman Abramovich. There's no doubt that he is someone who has backed away from the club. It's well documented he's failed to get a visa into the UK. He has taken residence elsewhere on this planet, not far from here. But in that, I think Roman Abramovich, this might be the new route that this club is taking. Roman Abramovich, you've got to be self-sufficient. I'm no longer dipping into my treasure trove and my own personal wealth to fund this football club. And this may be the first step into Roman Abramovich finding a new owner. You know, wouldn't be surprised. I've heard and I've said this on this show, you know, 8, 9, 10 months ago, I heard that if an offer was forthcoming, Roman Abramovich and his advisors would be more than willing to look at an offer for that football club. The problem that Chelsea have in terms of the stadium is there is no site in London now. Battersea went to the developers to turn it into luxury flats. Stamford Bridge, because of the train track there and because you're hemmed in, beautiful part of London, it would cost you close to £1 billion just to redevelop an old stadium. So there are a number of issues at that football club in terms of finding new owners. But you're absolutely right, Tom. Roman Abramovich is a little bit more hands-off. And this is a way for, you can kind of see it, this might be a decision that isn't necessarily coming from him. He's got a number of people running that football club now, and he's maybe said, listen, you run it and how you see fit, because in a year or two, if an offer comes in, I'm out.
Gonna take a short break. When we come back, more guests and we talk more football as well. Keep it locked here on Dubai Winner 3.8. You're listening to The Grill. We're broadcasting live from Kickers, which is kicking off at the moment down here. We're down at Dubai Sports City, so do come down and say hi if you are in the vicinity. We'd love to see you. We'll have more for you straight after this.
You're listening to The Grill, bringing you the biggest sports stories right now
on Dubai i 103.8.
Yeah, you are listening to The Grill. We're broadcasting live from Kickers down here at Dubai Sports City. Good crowd in this afternoon, enjoying the cricket. What's the latest, Mont?
Afghanistan have passed 200. They are 208 for 7 after 46 overs. And Australia have just lost their first wicket, 15 for 1. Trent Bolt taking the first wicket of Aaron Finch.
We will keep an eye on both of those games for you. Thanks so much indeed for your comments. Keep them coming in. 4001. Imraz has been in touch with us, saying 100% agree with you, Chris, on the Pogba issue. So, Imraz, thank you for that one. This one from Hassan Ali as well. Hassan's been in touch, as always, saying Pepita not in the Argentina squad is a good thing. How is Argentina performing again without him? Thank you for that one. And this one from Dubai Red out there, saying Frank and his entire backroom staff are all untested. All the youth players are also not at the EPL calibre. I think it'll be another Ole Gunnar Solskjaer. Thank you very much indeed. Interesting point.
Yeah, very interesting. Listen, it's a sport. Sport is about opinions. Frank may be a success. He may be not. Truthfully, none of us know. I just think if I was a Chelsea fan, there is no hard and fast rule. Sarri was, I guess, a relative success. Antonio Conte was, but for every Conte and Sarri, there has been a Luis Felipe Scolari, there has been an Andre Villas-Boas, and you know, if I'm a Chelsea fan, which I'm not, as I say, I would be quietly enthused about Super Frank coming back to the club, Jody Morris and his coaching staff, and trying to build a new Chelsea, a Chelsea that is built on young British talent and young talent from all around the globe.
Got to keep an eye on those ones for you. Another wicket in the cricket as well. Shaheen, the big Pakistan fast bowler, taking another wicket, Mons.
Yep, and that's 8 wickets down for Afghanistan, 210 for 8. Looking like Afghanistan are going to get to 225, 230, which Pakistan shouldn't find difficult chasing, in my opinion.
We'll keep an eye on the cricket. But let's continue the conversation on all things football, because obviously Women's World Cup ongoing at the moment, as is the Africa Cup of Nations, and of course the Copa America. 3 games in the Africa Cup of Nations a little later on in proceedings. Chris McCarty.
Indeed, yes, we are talking all things football. African Cup of Nations, we talked about it a little earlier this afternoon. It is ongoing, of course. I'm delighted to say that we're now joined by a man who, well, he's keeping a closer eye on the African Cup of Nations than most, and there's good reason for that. Delighted to be joined by Tom Jalak. He is the head of Umbro right here in the Middle East. A very good afternoon to you, Tom.
Thank you, Chris. Great to be on.
It is wonderful to have you on, and you are someone, and you can tell us why, the African Cup of Nations is a little closer to your heart than most, because your beloved Umbro, front and centre in this African Cup of Nations.
Yes, indeed. I mean, we are, well, I can say the reason why the African Cup is played this summer, literally, because as things went, I was in Cairo in April this year. I was meeting with Al Ahly Soccer Club, preparing for their kit launch for August, great club by the way, which we are sponsoring since November 2018. And during that week in Cairo, I get a phone call from CAF. We would like to talk about a partnership with you guys. I said, well, I'm in Cairo, so this is a great opportunity, as their head office is in 6th of October city in Cairo. So I went over there, and they said, well, we would like to initiate a partnership with you guys and look at the long-term strategic one, but there's one current need we have quite urgent. And I said, what is that? I said, well, we need 1,800 footballs for African Cup.
Remind us what month this was?
And this is April. This is first week, maybe on the edge to second week of April. So, and the days are important, because in my mind, I'm still under the impression that African Cup is played during the winter, which it has been the last 40 years probably. And so I said, well, would delivery in November be okay? And they go, well, that would be far too late, because the tournament is in June. Aha, okay, so you give us 2 months to prepare this this football. Yeah, and it has to be FIFA certified, it has to be in the Egyptian colors, and of course it has to be the 1,800 of them delivered beginning of June to us. I said, well, normally this takes 18 months, if you be strict. But I'll see what I can do, I'll see what I can do. And then the process started, I got in touch with my colleagues in Umbro, in Manchester. We started to source fabrics from Japan, flew it to Pakistan, where we started to, obviously not me, but the factory, started to put it together with the mid layers, with the bladder, and the hand sew the ball, 14 panels ball, hand stitched, flew it to Dubai. We took it out from the airport, brought it to the warehouse, back to the airport, shipped it to Cairo, and on the 8th of June, straight after Eid, the ball was delivered.
So just to be clear, a process like this, and I appreciate, Carl, you're involved in some of this as well, as you have been in your various guises and various brands in the world of football and across sport. 18 months, Tom, it takes normally for the contracts to be signed, you back and forth on designs.
Exactly.
You've done it in 2.
Yeah, a little bit more than 2, yeah. So, you know, we it's all about speed, you know, especially when it comes to Africa, Egypt. You know, there's not this perception of time. You know, it has to be delivered tomorrow. Yeah. A lot of brands obviously got the question before I was approached. That's obvious. But obviously, a lot of brands said, "Well, we can't do it. We need 18 months." We were lucky, you know, that we are a nimble, smaller brand. You know, we don't need the amount of approvals the big brand needs. So. And we needed this. We needed this for creating brand awareness. So it was a good opportunity.
Tom, more importantly, as we know, a very, very important part of the ball is, what have the players' feedback been on the ball so far?
So far, I haven't heard anything, so which means it's good.
Yeah. South Africa scored a goal. That's
exactly.
A good indication.
Normally, there is some goalkeeper complaining about the way the ball flies and so on, but I haven't heard anything. So I suppose, you know, they're happy with it, you know, and also the conditions in Cairo has been quite extreme with the heat and hasn't affected the ball, so that's good.
I guess one thing with Umbro, certainly for myself growing up in the UK as I did, I always associated Umbro, Manchester United were sponsored by Umbro for a spell. True. England national team, for whatever reason, when I think England national team, I instantly think Umbro. Umbro rooted in football, isn't it? So this is almost like a partnership that kind of harks back to what Umbro do well, and that is football.
Exactly. I mean, this is the image we want to establish in this region, that Umbro is our authentic football brand and one of the oldest sports brands in the world, established 1924 in outside Manchester, actually. So this is what our job is right now, to create credibility, to create awareness and connections with the big assets around the regions, but not forgetting also the small assets, yeah. The grassroots, the academies. We want to be a part of creating a football community. We want to be part of that fundamental culture of football in this region.
You mentioned Al Ahly, of course. Al Ahly here, we see how Shabab Al Ahly. We are talking about Al Ahly over in Egypt, a huge, huge club, one of the most successful clubs in all of Africa.
Massive.
Deal done with them. Have they been happy?
They are very happy so far. That's maybe a topic for another program, because that was also a 2 months deal when we turn around their needs, as they've had a fallout in October 2018 with their current sponsor, Sport, at that time. And the same story there. They called us, we supplied them with all the kits by January. For the first time now, until from August, we'll be able to actually prepare a good kit launch for them, which I'm looking forward to.
There was a video that leaked. I'm sure many people have seen it on social media. I couldn't believe that it's been leaked. Someone at Arsenal Football Club is in a lot of trouble. Video's been leaked this past weekend. Adidas at the forefront of this. An incredible campaign to release their Arsenal's new kit. Just how important is that day and age of social media? And we appreciate, you know, Umbro are competing with the Nikes, the Pumas, the Adidas to get into these football clubs. How important is it that you have the storyboarded? It isn't a simple case now. It's done deal, sign, we're with you guys for 10 years. It's much more than that now, isn't it? A brand linking up with a football club, there's a story to tell.
Absolutely, and that's what sells. That's what, in the end, the consumers are buying. They buy the story, not the product. Of course, there are a lot of hardcore fans there that always will buy their favorite team's jersey, but the majority of fans are very volatile, especially in this region. And if you tell a good story, if you have a good design, then you can win over a lot of fans. And that's what we're trying to do, build inspiring stories.
Now, Tom, we all know you played football at a very high level. Of what you've seen of the African Cup of Nations at this moment, what teams are you fancying and who do you think can go the full way in the competition?
It's still a very early stage, obviously, group stage. But I'm a fan of the North African teams. I think at least three of them we will see in the semifinals. I think Egypt, obviously, home advantage, massive importance for them. I like Morocco. I like what Hervé Renard is doing. And he is experienced in this tournament. Don't forget that he already won it twice with two different teams. I believe Morocco is one of the finalists. And also Algeria. I think Algeria had a little bit of a dip for a few years, but are strongly coming back. Who's the fourth team? I would say Senegal. Senegal has the strongest team on the paper, but yeah, anything can happen.
Sadio Mane, of course, Liverpool's Sadio Mane. I want to ask as well, you're from a footballing family, Tom. You would be remiss of me not to mention a man who I know very well as well, your brother Bartosz, who
yes.
was a member of AIK Stockholm's success last season. Our good friend Sean O'Shea has gone in for your brother, because your brother is now manager of the Swedish under-21 teams.
Correct.
Enjoying the job?
It is. I mean, he's travelling a lot. He's seeing a lot of places, seeing a lot of games. He was to Italy now, to Bologna, to watching the under-21. Exactly. And it's a great challenge. He's been in club football for 10 years, so it's a good exposure to be on the international scene. He's working together with Roland Nilsson, who previously was playing in Sheffield Wednesday in Coventry.
Yeah, Coventry City,
if you remember
right back.
Him,
yeah.
Replaced Strachan at a certain
yes,
point.
Yes, yeah, good knowledge.
So some good oldies coming up there.
But he's loving life though.
He does. It gives him also a little bit more, like we say in Sweden, work-life balance.
Absolutely. In terms of your work-life balance, and I want to come back to you, Umbro then, you're new to the role. obviously a huge coup with the African Cup of Nations official match ball. 1,800 over there, you've had no complaints, so things are going good. Umbro in the region, can we expect to see more exciting things in the coming months?
Oh yeah, we're just warming up. I was just coming back from our store. We're opening up the first Umbro store in the region tomorrow, if everything goes well. So welcome to have a look. It's down in Lalkus, and that's going to be the starting point in telling the story about Umbro. And my wish is that people will have the perception of Umbro as we in our generation does, because a lot of 15, 16, 17 years old don't really know what Umbro stands for.
Yeah, we were remarking on and off script that the world that we live in right now, you just have to look, and this is a bit of an odd little leap here, you just have to look at what's on in the cinema right now. It's all harking back to the 1990s. It seems that we are rooted in nostalgia right now. It's almost as if brands don't know what the kids want. It's all about our generation, the 30, 40-year-olds. It's harking back. Is that the case when it comes to football shirts, etc. as well? Is it all about the retro?
Yeah, but to a certain point it is. It is back to those glorious moments.
Yeah.
You know, we all want to remember them. We want to sometimes amplify them to make them better what they actually were. So there will always be that sense of nostalgia. But in all this, we need to be progressive as well. So I think it's a balance between being vintage and being authentic, but also to lead innovation.
Well, I must personally thank you as well, Tom, on behalf of Umbro and things like that, because as a West Ham fan, a long-suffering West
Ham
fan, we've made some pretty, well, dodgy signings so far. I think the best signing we have made so far is the long-term deal with Umbro, I think, which takes us up to 2023 now, as an official kit.
Something like that. And it's a beautiful jersey and beautiful story when they... Back to Chris' point, talk about the old and the new and how that kind of lives together.
And what's your academy? What's the way, the West Ham way?
The West Ham way,
it kind of ties in nicely with that, isn't it?
Look, it worked for us last season. We're finishing the top half of the table. So long may that continue. That's
winning the league next season is what it is, West Ham. Keep an eye on them. Listen, Tom, thank you so much for popping on. You've given us a little present as well. I'm going to post a picture of that official match ball. Are these available to buy, incidentally?
They are, and they will be available in the new Umbro store opening up tomorrow.
Brilliant, Tom. And where can it, final one, it can be located, Alcoz?
In Alcoz, in Al Jood Center.
Okay, that's where it is. Head on down. Loads of kits will be available, and you can get the West Ham kit as well.
We're working on it.
Right, fine. Mr. Ackert will
in
be
in limited
down there.
Edition. All right.
Good evening, Tom. Much appreciated. Thank you very much indeed to Tom. Thanks to all the team from Umbro as well. Post up those pictures.
There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.